The funny thing is, I had that game and I never played it, and I traded it in, wrapping intact.
I love being a troll because you just get to piss so many people off.
What would you rather be inside of? A giant robot or magical girl?
Now we're stuck with you.
I'm pretty sure I'm on a higher plane of existence than you.
I was just about to bring that up. Nintendo, I'm not even going to say anything.
We shall give you a quality show today. I'll be giving you at least 78%.
Launching!
Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to an episode of Anavision EXT. I am Jero, joined by Amro.
What's up?
And we are here to talk about part two of the Kizu Monogatari movie series, Neketsuhen? There's a Taketsu? Shoot.
Iron-blooded. Yeah, the second one is hot-blooded.
Okay. All right.
Yes. So, Neketsu.
Right. So this movie covers the big fights that Araragi has versus all of the characters that stole limbs from Kishot.
So the three vampire hunters.
Yeah. And just like a quick thing, the first EXT that we did for this, we talked about the entirety of the book and the first movie. Here we're just going to talk about the second movie in comparison to those parts of the novel. So we won't be spoiling anything about the third novel or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I think watching this movie, I kind of you think about how the first movie ended, and it ended at a fairly appropriate scene, but there was something about it that felt a little bit sudden.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like now, having seen both movies, that these are at their best watched all together because of the way that they cut in and cut out at the end.
So, I think it's safe. Like, it's definitely safe to say that these movies were meant to be watched together.
Right.
For whatever reason, you know, you can speculate whether it was, you know, for monetary reasons or for the fact that the movie was too long, that it was split into three parts. But I feel like this movie as a standalone experience was better than the first part.
Yeah.
Just because it was more, there was more action to it. The climax felt more climactic.
Right.
In a standalone sense. But then, if you know, there's the whole fact that you have to have seen the first movie to, you know, to actually enjoy this one, to know what's going on and stuff. So in that sense, no, it's not a standalone movie, but I feel like it was a stronger installment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, it has a lot more. There's a lot more memorable moments. The first movie is, you know, there's a lot of setup to it, which is good in the way that you know, the Monogatari series always is. But
yeah, the first movie I feel like was one long drawn out. Like the bulk of the first movie was that first encounter with Kishot in the subway station.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like that was most of the movie. Or at least that's what it felt like. Right. But this one, you know, this one had lots of big action set pieces, you know, three specifically. And then but the stuff in between those set pieces was also strong.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the first of Araragi's three battles in this movie versus Dramaturgy, who is a full vampire.
Yep.
And this was a little bit, there's a little bit, you know, it was very action-packed, it was very intense, but there's a more sort of comedic element to this battle versus the other two, in that you see Araragi discover that he's throwing a ton of baseballs at the guy, and then all of a sudden he throws like a shot put ball, and that actually does some damage to Dramaturgy.
Yeah. I just love the setup, because the big difference between the novels and, of course, the movies is that you get, in the books, you get Araragi's internal monologue and the reasons why he's doing things, right? So, like, in the book, he talks about, hey, I bought two books. I bought one about, I think it was judo or aikido or something like that.
Right.
Because he's going into a fight, so he wanted to learn how to fight. But then he also just happened to pick up a book about baseball. You know, and he ended up, the book about baseball ended up helping him in his fight, because it, you know, he was you know, he was using that those skills he learned from the book to throw those balls. But the way it's shown in the movie, like you just kind of see the books.
Right.
And he doesn't really like he doesn't explain it. It's told visually. So I kind of really enjoyed that. There's also the fact that the fight in the movie was very different from how it was told in the book. Whereas like in the book, it just all took place on the track field. In the movie, it moved around the entire school. Like you right. see him getting thrown through classrooms and stuff. And so it's way more dynamic in how it unfolds.
Right. Yeah. They're on the roof at one point, I believe, of the school. But yeah, that point about the way that, you know, Arderaghi's internal monologue is in the book is that Shaft, when they made this movie, you know, surely they think, you know, things like that. You know, if you're smart enough and you notice that in the first movie, you would catch on. And that's something we don't need to add again to the movie to kind of extend it a little bit to, in some sense, kind of artificially extend it by just adding in monologue that, you know, it's good in reading, but maybe not good in watching.
And well, and that's one thing that we probably mentioned in the first EXT that we talked about this, but like Kizu is very different from the Monogatari animated TV series in that those keep the narration. They keep the internal monologue. This one largely omits it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I feel like it's certainly, I don't know. It's a very different experience from, but it omits it, but you still get that sense of what Adaragi's feeling and what's going through his head by his emotions, the way he expresses his, you know, his emotions through his face and body language and breathing and all of that. So it still does a great job of getting all that stuff across.
Yeah, I agree. And then, of course, he wins the battle because he picks up one of those big rollers and Dramaturgy gives up. And then he talks about how, you know, Adaragi, I had no shot of beating you. You were just way too strong for me, which is news to Adaragi.
Yeah. You know, like, he's like, he didn't realize just how powerful he actually was.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of, you know, it's kind of a hint for later on in the story, but, you know, he's like, he realizes that as a servant to Kishot, like he has become top tier when it comes to and how his like you see through the fight that he's getting body parts blown off, but like they'll slowly grow back or, you know, they'll grow back pretty quickly. That was one thing is like in the book, the way the regeneration works is that like sometimes even before the blood hits the ground, it's already evaporated and his arm is back. Mm-hmm. Right. But here, like. And I think they probably did it for comedic effect a little bit. Like, you know, he runs around armless for a little while, then he suddenly has a little hand sticking out of where his arm used to be, and he pulls it out.
Right.
And that totally reminded me of Deadpool when he had little baby hand.
Although that was just like the first time, but then in subsequent times that he got it, you know, lopped off, that they kind of grew back a little quicker, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. and then. Dramaturgy tried to recruit Nardoggy, but that failed, obviously. And so we see that he gets the first body part back. What is it, one of her arms or one of her legs? I'm forgetting.
It was one of her legs.
One of her legs, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Dramaturgy had a leg.
Episode had the other leg.
Yeah, and then Guillotine Cutter had both arms.
Both arms, that's right.
All right, so after that, we see that she eats the limb, and she has a noticeable growth. Yeah, that was you know, obviously animated very well and fan servicey as hell.
Which is a little weird, considering she went from, you know, of course, this is still a 500-year-old vampire, right. She goes from having a 10-year-old body to a 12-year-old body, and you're still like, I don't know how to feel about this.
Right. Yeah, and then... meanwhile, Hanakawa comes into the cram school and brings him clothes and stuff. And so she's kind of admiring his physique and all that. And, you know, they have a conversation about Hanakawa wanting to support him.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that scene in particular. in part because, you know, Kishot at this point, she's sleeping or pretending to be asleep, even though every now and again she'll wake up to say something while she's still asleep. I really like it drove home just how hormonal these two teenagers are.
Right. Right.
Where, like, you know, when it comes to fan service, a lot of the time there's what you would call male gaze, where you're like the camera will focus on like the female body or whatever. So Hanakawa very noticeably has large breasts in this adaptation, like, which right. I feel like they're even larger than they are in the TV series.
Yeah.
But like, so it makes like this movie kind of makes a point of like, you know, focusing on that and showing that off and stuff. But at the same time, like, there's an equal measure of Hanakawa kind of lusting after Araragi's new vampire body, right?
Uh-huh.
Like you said, when she brings the change of clothes and he takes a shirt off, and she is like, she is all about that. And I kind of really enjoyed that tension between the two of them, where, again, like, it's not outright, it's not spelled out. Like, the way the camera, the focus of the camera and the interaction of the two spells it out more.
Yeah.
So that was one of the scenes that stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, through watching the movie, it kind of, you know, as we go back and read Bakemonogatari that comes out later this month on paperback, and we've seen a movie or series, of course, that it kind of adds a little bit of context to their interactions.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So next up, we have the second battle of Araragi versus Episode, who is a half vampire and half human. I believe the movie didn't go quite into detail about his character and how they may, I think a little bit went to how he was hated by both sides.
Yeah. And the movie basically, they did talk about how he didn't have a place to belong to, but he hated vampires.
Yeah.
And Araragi kind of asked, you know, like, why doesn't he hate humans just as much? And then, you know, they went and talked about that some in the movie, but yeah. They touched basically on just like, oh, this is who he is. This is, you know, he's a half vampire. So he's got the strengths of a vampire, but none of the weaknesses.
Uh-huh. Right. Right. Yeah. And as far as like, you know, setting for this battle, it was really cool because they had it in like this open, like, plaza area. And it was nighttime, and the lights were bright. And then by the end of the battle, they're in a soccer stadium.
Yep.
Just really, you know, well choreographed battle, and like, you know, animated too. I think it was one of the. It was a really cool. That was my favorite battle of the
first. Oh yeah. It was my only. I have like two complaints about that battle. One, the kind of repeated shot of Episode laughing. I feel like that was a little overdone, just because I feel like they did it maybe like once or twice too many times. but I mean, that's a minor complaint overall. But the other thing was like the whole issue of him turning into mist. It didn't, like, the way it was portrayed, it felt more like he was teleporting rather than turning into mist.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like when Hanakawa was like, he's water, you know, use the sand to stop him. It didn't, I don't know, like it in the book, it's very clearly described that he's turning into mist. In the movie, it just kind of felt like he was disappearing and reappearing. So, and sort of like teleporting.
Yeah.
But again, minor complaints. I still overall really enjoyed that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the big payoff of the fight.
Hanakawa came in and she had gotten cut by his cross as he was flinging it around, and then Araragi heals her by giving her his blood.
Mm-hmm. By digging into his, and that, I think that's one part that we kind of skipped over, was the part where Kishot dug into her brain and scrambled it around to remember details.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's kind of like that's where he got the inspiration to do that. But man, the grotesque way that that was done, I was very impressed. You know, like to just have Hanakawa, like her intestines like twirling through the air, and you know, like right. they were not shy about, you know, being gory in this movie, and I was very glad they didn't. That was even one of the jokes in the novel, was that they could never have an anime adaptation because of how gory it was when she would dig inside her head or the bloody stuff.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, here we are with an anime adaptation.
and they stay true to the story. All right, and then after that, we get Kishak gets another leg. She eats it, and quite a censoring there with a bunch of bats flying around her as became like, what was that, like an 18-year-old body by that point?
Yeah, it's like a 17, 18-year-old body, but that teenage kiss shot is a miracle of the universe.
Right. and then we have one more conversation between Hanakawa and Araragi outside in like some wheat field or something in the middle of nowhere. And this is when we kind of see Araragi kind of wants her to get away again, but last time he was just like, you know, I'm dealing with this situation, I don't want anybody involved, but there's sort of a sense of a fear for her well-being this time. And even after I think he deleted her number earlier,
Earlier in the movie he tried to force her away by like, you know, being like, I hate you, never talk to me again, and she still she still sought him out. Oh, that's right, because she showed up at the again, another detail we sort of skipped over, but she showed up at the dramaturgy fight and saw the end of it, and that's how she like figured out that he was a vampire at that point. And you know, earlier there was a when he was reading the books to go fight dramaturgy, that's when she ran into him on the street and he tried to force her away and like, you know, said, I don't want to be your friend anymore, I never want to be your friend, and blah blah blah. Uh-huh. And she apologized to him. She was like, I'm sorry I made you say all that.
Right.
So the big thing about this, the fight, you know, the conversation right now in the wheat field that we're talking about, is that Araragi he's creeped out by her, by her sort of selflessness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, she wants to be there and help him or whatever. He's like, I barely know you and you could get hurt and die. Why are you doing this? He's like, it's not that at this point, it's not even that I'm worried about you. It's just that it weirds me out. And she even says, I'm not being selfless, I'm being selfish.
Uh-huh. Right.
Right. She's like, I'm doing this because I want to. I really like this Kizu Monogatari, as much as it's a story about Araragi and Kishot, like it's a story about Araragi and Tsubasa.
Mm-hmm.
And Hanakawa. Right. Like it really is about those two and their sort of like their first meeting and their relationship and like it gives so much context to where those two are at the beginning of Bakemonogatari.
And there's also about how Araragi thinks of her as being incredibly smart and all she says is I know what I know. And then before the final battle, Hanakawa gives Araragi her panties.
Yep.
And says that basically saying, make it to the next semester and give these back to me. And he is not interested in giving those back. That's a family heirloom.
That was my favorite. That's one of my favorite jokes in the entire movie is, or the novel even, is when he's like, nope, these have now become a family heirloom. They will be protected and passed down within the Araragi family. Yeah. Freaking, I also sort of love the, you know, again, the, where she's talking about like how, you know, he's going off into this fight or whatever, but it's nothing compared to the danger of a girl wearing a skirt that offers very little defense walking home without any panties on.
Right.
So that he, you know, he's like, you've got nothing to fear sort of sense.
Yeah. And then, of course, the reveal of her panties, which were even more risque than in the first movie, was given the epic music treatment. Dun, dun, dun. And then we have the last battle, which is Guillotine Cutter. Mm-hmm. This one, like, if you blink, you miss it. It went by fast.
Went by very fast.
Because this is one where I kind of felt like they kind of needed a little bit more from the novel, because they don't really talk about, like, you know, what the technique is that he turns his arms into plants and gets behind Guillotine Cutter that way to rescue Hanakawa. But that battle, I was kind of looking forward to it, and it was not as good as the other two.
Yeah, it did go by much quicker. Like, at that point, you can tell that they were just trying to fit. I was honestly surprised that they fit in that fight for this movie. I thought they were only going to do two, the first two. Mm-hmm. I still like how it ended, though. I mean, like, you know, with Adedai sort of discarding his humanity.
Right.
How that had been sort of something that he had talked to with Shinobu. Oshino. Yeah. Oshino basically told him to give up on becoming human again. And when he basically fully embraced the fact that he was a vampire and was able to change his body like that. So, yeah, like, you know, that's one of those things where, like you said, from the novel, there was a lot of talk like how and this goes back to one of the conversations that he had with Hanakawa, where he spent a lot of time visualizing himself as a plant. But she was like, you know, she made a mention that, like, you know, it's interesting that you chose a plant and not something inanimate like a rock. Right. So when it came time to him to shapeshift, he's like, yeah, I can easily become a plant because I've spent so much of my life, you know, visualizing that I could easily, you know, become that. Mm-hmm. It was still I thought it was still visually spectacular when he created that gigantic tree out of nowhere, basically. But yeah, I can totally see how that fight was a little disappointing considering how fast it was. There's also the fact that, like, Guillotine Cutter is built up to be such a big deal.
Right.
When you consider that, like, he's the one that got both of her arms, mm-hmm. of Kishot's arms, and that, like, you never really get a sense of why he's so strong.
Yeah.
One thing that I will mention, and we also forgot to mention, is that he's the only one out of the vampire hunters that's completely human. Yeah. And it's kind of the progression of the fights, how it kind of went like that. Like, as his enemies became more human, Adedagi became less human.
Right.
Right. So he fought a vampire, a full-blooded vampire at first, but he at that point he was still trying to fight him with a human mentality. He was still trying to use, you know, martial arts, mm-hmm. or, you know, physical, like, you know, human ways of fighting.
Yeah.
And then, like, as he progressed through those fights, he was like, well, I am a vampire.
Uh-huh.
But there's also sort of the sense that, like, his villains, or the villains, right, that he was fighting against, like, again, like, you know, as they became more human, they became more monstrous.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, like, Dramaturgy, the first one to fight was, you know, he's a full-blooded vampire again. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, he's the one he gave up. He didn't push the fight. Like, he was like, you know what? I admit defeat. In fact, if you want, join me. We can, you know, work together. Episode was the half vampire, and he, like, straight up killed. Like, Hanakawa would have been dead.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then, but that was more like a byproduct of the fight. Like, freaking Guillotine Cutter went out of his way to kidnap Hanakawa, to threaten her, and mm-hmm. and try to use her to, you know, get to Adedagi, and he's the human one, right? So I really love that sort of parallel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that is good, but the movie doesn't display enough of Guillotine Cutter to complete that.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
That comparison. Whereas the book does do that better.
Absolutely.
And if I'm correct, the movie officially ends at that point.
Yeah. Like, the last scene of the movie is Adedagi talking about how he's a monster.
Right. Yeah. And now, and then, there's something about the way these movies end is just kind of awkward. It's like, there was music playing with black screen for about 15 seconds, I want to say, or something like that. I was like, are we going to get another scene?
I guess that's the end.
All right, we'll just wait for a preview. All right, so overall, very, very entertaining movie so far in the series. The mm-hmm. battles were great. The Guillotine Cutter part, not quite as good, but everything else was fantastic. And fun and fan servicey.
Yes, this is a very violent and also very sexy movie.
Right.
But I'm really looking forward to the final part. Eventually, I want to sit down and watch the whole thing in one go.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be the best experience. But to me, the real payoff and the real conflict of the book is going to be is that last part, and that's where all the big revelations happen. And so I'm super excited to see that part.
Right. And the first movie, obviously, it's online; you can torrent it wherever. But the collector's edition from Aniplex is going to be available a couple days after Christmas, and you can pre-order that. It's if you've seen any Monogatari box set collection, it's very much like that with the postcards and the booklets and the nice packaging.
Yes. So I'm definitely, I think this one even comes with a soundtrack.
Oh yeah.
I think so. That's what I remember seeing that somewhere, but, I'm definitely planning on getting this one. I think you pre-ordered it, Jero.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I typically don't order the Aniplex stuff, and I don't have the full collection like you do.
Oh yeah, I was sitting here looking like, now I have to order Owari Monogatari, and
right,
that's split into two sets, and they're $70 a piece.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, like, that just came out. Oh man, your wallet is going to hurt.
But you know, they look nice lined up on my shelf.
All right, so that has been our second EXT for the Kizu Monogatari movie series. Niketsu Hen was indeed the name of the second movie, by the way. For Amro, I'm Jero. We will see you next time on the Anavision Podcast. Believe it.